Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, a podcast for embedded Linux developers.
Hi, this is Gene Sally. I'm here with Maciej Halasz.
Hello.
And today we're working on, we're going to talk about real time. With our last podcast, we talked a little bit about, about the basics of real time, you know, the terminology and the taxonomy and some of the terms you hear. And today we're going to delve deeper into what's happening in 2.6.
Yeah, well, the topic of real time is a fairly complex one. So we've split the series of podcasts into, well, a couple of them. Last time we spent a lot of time talking about various issues and, well, we were talking about different terms and we were introducing different definitions. Mm-hmm. We talked about some of the common problems that you can expect from an operating system like Linux. Mm-hmm. And we also have approached some of the beliefs as to what real-time system really is.
Okay.
So we talked in detail about latencies. We've defined what the kernel latency is, mm-hmm. but I don't think that we have covered extensively what are the sources, possible sources of those latencies. We definitely talked about interrupts disabled, right? Because that's an obvious one. And that's where you would expect to have increased latencies because if a scheduler cannot schedule a high priority task to run, well, the high priority task will definitely experience delays. Did we talk about spin locks?
You know what? We didn't. But for folks that are just joining in, just like a 2-second recap there. So
yep.
We talked about real-time systems. So real-time means predictable, not fast. It has nothing to do with throughput. We also talked about the concept of latency, which is the difference between when something should run and when it actually does run.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then we also mentioned things like hard and soft real-time.
Yep.
And so you're always better at defining the hard and soft real-time than I am. But right? Right. So, like, hard real-time is must happen or there's terrible consequences, right? And then soft real-time is, well, you can miss a deadline here and there.
Right. That's best correct. Performance you can actually get without worst-case guarantees.
Correct.
Right. And then we talked about three different areas of latency.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the interrupt latency, scheduler latency, and the overall Linux kernel latency. But I think, so should we now jump into sources?
Yeah. Well, you know, I figured we'll spend a whole 30 seconds and make sure.
Okay, I agree.
Just happen to start listening.
So spin locks. Why are they sources of additional latencies?
I have no idea.
I'm sure you do know what it's all about, but basically spin locks.
Tell me, Sensei.
Sensei, right. Spin locks are, a very interesting synchronization mechanisms where as you spin on a specific mutual exclusion area,
huh?
All the other tasks in a system are also blocked, even those that might not necessarily require that that CPU, or I'm sorry, not CPU, the access to that mutual exclusion. So at the end, you have threads that are being blocked because of other threads spinning on mutual exclusion.
Yeah. So whenever you hear the word, whenever you hear the word spin lock, right? My first thing is, well, what's spinning? Right?
Yeah.
So really, it's a loop that's happening, right? It's a polling loop. And that's the spin, so to speak. And as that polling loop runs, and it's, in essence, hogging, I should say this, hogging. Well, yeah, it is hogging, right?
It's active, so it does consume the time.
Yeah, it does consume time, and it sits and doesn't relinquish that thread. And so the scheduler doesn't have a chance to get in there and switch things around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always had the thing when I was thinking, so why even bother using such a thing as a spin lock? So why is even such a thing useful is one of my big questions when I first came into the
I think it's actually very useful when you work with an SMP systems where you have multiple processors and you want to you have a way of other tasks that do not require that mutual exclusion run on a different processor.
Yeah.
You want to kind of like control what's running where. Well, it was a concept introduced early on in the Linux kernel, and nowadays there are other ways of doing or ensuring the correct execution on multiple CPUs with various synchronization objects.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, because I know for a great matter, right, spinlocks have been largely replaced by mutexes. And mutexes are much more gentle with respect to both what they require of the processor, right, and their ability to be scheduled.
Right.
As a matter of fact, when you look at the... we talk about priority inheritance, but you know, something like a mutex is something that is schedulable and subject to the rules of priority inheritance, while spinlock is not due to the nature of its implementation.
Exactly.
And so when times was way back when in the dark ages in 2004, right? So whenever we did our real time distribution, one of the first things we did is we went through the kernel, replaced all the spinlocks with mutexes. And therefore could get some scheduling out of them. And when you look at what they did in 2.6 kernel in terms of real-time, pretty much the same approach was taken.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what we've done to the 2.4 Linux kernel to make it more real-time is absolutely, the areas that we've enhanced got implemented, also changed in the 2.6 Linux kernel. So let's talk about it in more detail in a few minutes, but I wanted to continue on sources of latency. Still.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If you're okay with that.
That's okay.
So next area that is that can cause some delays is shared interrupt lines. If you have multiple interrupts hooked onto the same interrupt line, they usually execute in cascades. So by the time the system gets to the interrupt service routine that is really important to you, there are some other interrupt service routines that get executed. Mm-hmm. So if those other earlier interrupt service routines consume a lot of time, your high priority task that relies on a specific ISR would be delayed by that delta.
That's correct.
And so that's definitely one of the sources of latencies. What else?
Now, when you talk about interrupt cascading too, I just want to make sure if that's new terminology. So that's an interrupt service routine. That when so you interrupt you map a line into one routine, but you can map multiple interrupt handlers onto the same line, right? And so each interrupt handler has to do its thing and then pass.
Right.
And so when you talk about cascading, that's whenever you have several ISRs, interrupt service routines, mapped to the same line. So each one runs and says, "No, I don't need to do anything." And when it exits, in essence, the operating system comes by and says, "Oh, who's next in the chain?
Yes.
And who's next and who's next?"
And sometimes you can't avoid cascading because you got only a limited number of hardware interrupts that you can use in a system. But it all comes down to really figuring out which interrupt lines are important to you and or to the high priority execution, and then manage the interrupt service routines accordingly. I think that another problematic area for real time is when engineers design device drivers, and there are certain rules as you go through this exercise that are important from a standpoint of real time. Do not disable interrupts when you're in a device driver, right?
Well, why not?
Well, we've covered that just 5 minutes ago, right?
I forgot already.
If you disable interrupts, you delay execution of user land high priority tasks. Even though your device driver might require certain CPU time, well, just schedule that CPU time on a By just following the rules, built the interrupt service routines correctly, at the execution blocks in such a way that they get to run when they need to.
But that really gets into the preemptible nature of the 2.6 kernel, right? I mean, whenever you disable all the interrupts, in essence, you're preventing the kernel from preempting itself when it needs to, right? Isn't that really what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
You're sort of completely defeating the scheduling system. It is probably the easier way to get your code to work. No doubt about it, right? It's definitely a lot easier. But right off the bat, you've introduced a huge latency because you're not allowing the system to do what it really should be doing. And in that sort of case, you need to look at whatever it is you're doing and build the right critical sections, mm-hmm. using mutexes or whatever else to guard whatever sort of shared data that you have, instead of the sledgehammer method of just stopping everything. I mean, it's definitely easier to do it that way, right?
Yes.
No doubt about it, it's easier. But then again, you're going to suffer a tremendous performance penalty. Scheduling penalties.
Well, which will result in a performance penalty.
Yes.
So the next thing that engineers, I think, sometimes think of is I can map interrupts, right? So I'm not going to disable them, but I'm going to add a couple other routines, and I'm going to do that at my device driver level. This is perfectly fine, again, but it goes back to the last point that we were making, that when you do that, be careful which interrupt line you are masking, and make sure that you're not adding too much of code in that in your own interrupt service routine, because mm-hmm. as important as that code might be to your device driver, it will definitely impact other tasks in the system, which again can cause some hiccups once you measure your performance, and let's say your device driver receives a lot of generates a lot of interrupts, suddenly the performance of the system might just go down.
Yes, and it's an important thing too. I mean, we have customers that we get in touch with, and they say, hey, we're having a certain performance problem, and they've constructed systems, and they've used n many number of drivers that are available from open source or from, and if you just grep around for through the source code for disable interrupts, or disable an IRQ, you'll find the guilty driver, right? And usually customers are suffering from latency in that respect, or using a driver written without latency in mind.
Right.
And I guess it's one of the beauties of having using Linux is that you do have availability and you can look at all that source and it's there.
Right.
But as you're constructing your real-time system, that's something you really have to be aware of. As you're using other people's code, you have to make sure and do an audit of it so that it's not doing any of these sort of dangerous activities.
Well, what I would also see this danger of running into those problems is when you forward port a device driver from, let's say, 2.4 Linux kernel to 2.6.
Oh, yeah.
And in 2.4, even the best device drivers just didn't care about those different areas that are important to real time. But it's more likely to find, let's say, spin locks around a 2.4 Linux kernel device driver than in 2.6.
Well, yes,
in 2.6 you won't see this kind of code anymore. But
you just have to keep your eyes open, and that does get people that are putting together systems and they've used bits and pieces of open source, and they may switch their network driver or switch some other driver, and then all of a sudden their system is not behaving.
And we've seen that many, many times.
Yeah, you just grep-r and you look for whatever they're using, and what do you know, right? It usually turns up in their code some of the guilty things, or especially when you do forward porting, because a lot of the macros are there for the compatibility reasons for the drivers, so you don't have to do a lot of coding, but those macros do the wrong thing.
Right.
Right. So,
and they are very tough to find sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Especially during runtime. Not when you compile, but at runtime, those macros are sometimes difficult to spot.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what are the improvements in the 2.6 Linux kernel. Let's list them out first.
Sure.
And then let's cover them one by one. And let's talk about the impact on end user that does want real-time and end user that does not want real-time. Because there's a trade-off, as we discussed last time, right? When you do want to use the real-time features of a Linux kernel, you are trading off the throughput.
That's correct, yeah.
So, scheduler, right? That's one thing that we started covering last time, but scheduler is definitely one of the first areas that got modified in 2.6 Linux kernel. As a matter of fact, the improved implementation of scheduler came out with one of the first releases of 2.6 Linux kernel.
Mm-hmm.
Improved POSIX support, right? So there are different areas under that tag. There are signals, there are POSIX threads. The preemption, the kernel is more preemptive in 2.6 Linux kernel, and we can talk in more details about how that has been achieved.
Mm-hmm.
Spin locks have been changed by mutexes with priority inheritance.
Yep.
Soft and hard interrupt service routines. So there's a way of executing interrupts as kernel threads. We'll talk about it a bit more. High resolution timer support, which is the latest addition to a real-time patch set inside the kernel mainline. There are several mechanisms that allow you to track various latencies inside the Linux kernel by default, so you can just enable them and collect the data. Did I miss anything, Gene?
No. Because there's a couple things that fall under the fully preemptive.
Right.
Yeah. We'll just expand that as we go.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
So you started last week talking about O1 scheduler. If you don't mind, starting that again.
Sure. So O1 scheduler means it runs. You know the big O or lambda notation. That's I don't know if people are semi or familiar with that, but that has to do with tracking or expressing the runtime of an algorithm with respect to its input, okay? And so when you say something is O1, you're saying that it is constant time. And so constant time means that any operation will take the same amount of time,
mm-hmm.
which is important for real time because that means you can schedule it in your system and it's a predictable amount of time. So the scheduler in 2.6 is designed such that as you add or remove tasks, that takes the same amount of time no matter how many tasks are running.
Right.
And then whenever it decides to switch to a task, that takes the same amount of time, no matter how many tasks it's managing.
Hmm.
And in that way, if you think about the latencies we were talking about, that's something we talk about, scheduler latency. And, of course, you can't have zero scheduler latency, right? But you can have substantially reduced scheduler latency. And it is a predictable amount of latency. So all those things put together make that part of the kernel much more predictable with respect to performance.
I see. So the way the scheduler schedules the tasks is, I mean, to achieve that constant interval or constant time, is it has two priority queues or arrays, right? One which is active and the other one that is expired. And so it grabs the tasks, the highest priority task from the active array, mm-hmm. executes it for the time slice that it has.
Correct.
And then it puts it into expired array.
Correct.
So it goes through the array of active tasks first. Once that array is empty, it swaps active with expired.
Yep.
And then it starts doing that.
Runs it all over again.
Job again. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And all that is done in, constant interval time. So regardless of how many tasks are really scheduled or ready to run in a queue.
Mm-hmm.
There is potential of hogging the kernel. I'm going to use the terminology here, but if you have a lot of threats, but that's I would say that would be a bad system design.
Yeah, there are corner cases where you can have, let's say, starvation, just because there are too many things. A very large number of too many, right? Running. Such that no one really gets a decent amount of time to execute. But I do that. I mean, that's such an oddball corner. I mean, you're talking tens of thousands of threads.
Right. And usually that is, again, poorly designed system, because if you have that many threads, you better have more CPUs, more processing power, and divide that between processors. I mean, I've heard recently about the new computer designed by a company that is going to run 2,000 processors in one box under control of a single Linux kernel.
Wow, you could heat your house with that.
Which is amazing. I mean, given that the latest Linux kernels can support, I believe, the SMP part of it can support up to 1,000 processors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of that gets on. I mean, when you're talking about the ready-to-run queue and how it sifts through, you know, it'll sift through that queue and bring up the highest priority thing to the top and then execute that and then throw it onto the, you know, I've already been run queue. But, you know, this is an interesting segue. I mean, systems have a lot of threads in them. A lot of people that are inexperienced real-time engineers, right, will do things like create a bunch of threads and have a bunch of different threads running that they believe they can schedule. And the obvious thing is that, you know, a thread, there's still only one line of execution in the processor, right? There's only one processor doing things.
Right.
And then whenever you switch among a different thread, you're paying a penalty to do the switch. But the concurrency is in essence an illusion, right? It's a complete illusion in between when this thread is running and the other thread is running. It's swapping back before them quickly.
Right.
And it's interesting that, you know, when you have a multiprocessor system, you could realistically have concurrency.
Yes.
But on a single processor machine, concurrency is, in fact, it's an illusion.
Yes.
Afforded to you by the scheduler.
Yes.
And I'm sorry to get off on a blind trail, but it's, you know, when you're doing something like real time, what you probably really want to do is to reduce the number of threads you have running in your system, so that you can have a better handle on the schedulability. And a better understanding of how your system behaves, because once it starts running, there's really no way to do, you know, debugging and that sort of safety and scheduling safety among as many threads, among a large number of threads, especially when you get into, like, I'm sorry to interrupt you, a ridiculous number like 100 or 1,000 or something like that.
I think that what you want to minimize is the number of high priority threads in the system, right? Because if the real-time system is designed correctly, you will, the low priority threads will never get to run, right? But if you have higher demand on CPU from a real-time thread standpoint, well, that would be a problem. And there are different theories and mathematical boundaries that we can probably talk about here a bit that design or that can help design the real-time system as far as CPU utilization is concerned, regarding when you look at processing power, number of threads, priorities, and all that. One of the approaches is rate monotonic analysis, right, which we have implemented in the past, but that's just one.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That was a segue.
That was a nice segue,
but
it torques me every time I have to. Every time I confront that problem, it sort of torques me. Yeah. So
let's talk about full preemption inside Linux kernel right now, because this is one of the most important aspects of.
It's a semi segue. I know.
It is connected.
You know, a lot of the full preemption came out of doing SMP implementation on Linux, because in order to do SMP, you must be completely preemptible, because you really do have concurrent activity, and so the kernel really has things running on several different processors, and it needs to be able to stop nearly in any place and do a context switch.
Right. And so the way that was solved was additional rescheduled points have been added to Linux kernel. The scheduler is called more frequently.
Yes.
So that the real-time task, well, the scheduler, when it arrives at that point, can figure out whether there is a higher priority task ready to run in a queue and then switch the context. What's interesting is that there are different classes of preemption defined inside a 2.6 Linux kernel. That is, there's a concept of voluntary preemption that has been introduced.
Yeah.
You want to talk about it?
No.
Okay. Well, so I will. I will start at least. So voluntary preemption is the a mechanism inside the Linux kernel that allows the kernel to see if it should basically do the context swap inside, well, mutual exclusion, for example. As the task is executing in mutual exclusion, and we talked a bit about unbounded priority inversion last time, and there's a higher priority task ready to run that would like to acquire that shared resource. There's a mechanism right now that allows that currently executing thread to see, okay, there's this higher priority task that wants to run this in this mutual exclusion. I'm going to save my context while do the voluntary preemption.
And this is the thing I always got confused about. And that's okay. I always get confused about stuff. But when I hear about voluntary preemption and priority inheritance, I think to myself, well, what's the difference? I've never... there's some subtle distinction there that for some reason just is not making it through. I'm not bending my brain the right way to understand that difference.
Well, unbounded priority inversion, right, is basically something that happens because if a lower priority task holding or blocking a high priority task
from
executing, right? And that's, we covered that last time, I guess,
got
to
it.
Some extent.
Mm-hmm.
The voluntary preemption allows the kernel to improve the preemptiveness, hence the latency, by switching the context, execution context, from a thread that's executing while holding certain resources that are needed by higher priority tasks.
Okay.
So in priority inheritance approach, what you do is you get the priority of the highest priority task to execute at its priority. But what that means is that the higher priority task will not get to run during that time.
Okay.
And if the mutual exclusion section is long enough, well, that's the delay that your high priority task will incur. With voluntary preemption, it's different because you do not finish running in that mutual exclusion. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
And again, this is my take on it, so...
sort of. So what you're saying is voluntary preemption some other thread can come in there and get running, not necessarily the one higher up in the priority chain?
No, higher up in the priority chain, but higher up in the priority chain and requiring that same shared resource.
Okay. Maybe that's a little bit clearer. I have to think about it for a little bit.
Okay. We can come back to that topic next week.
it's always been one of those things where, and people explain it to me, and like you, and then I ask again, and then they get sort of angry, and then like the third or fourth time they get really frustrated and tell me they have a meeting to go to or coffee, or I don't know, they sort of bolt.
Okay, I have a meeting that I have to go. No, we'll cover it again and again if. You think that we should? I mean, if the explanation, we'll listen to this podcast at the end.
Maybe there's like a Dr. Seuss's voluntary preemption book or something. I can get my head around. I don't know. I just
We'll continue looking for a better explanation in that case. Next time you explain that concept, I'm going to be a listener.
Okay, I'll learn it well enough. I'll be able to explain it. But it just hasn't settled through my head yet. So the other thing we wanted to talk about was our queue handling.
Yes.
And I guess the nifty thing about the kernel is that it has some tasklets or different ways for you to manage interrupts that come in. so that you can do a better job of scheduling them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you do interrupt handling, right, you have this notion of what they call a top half and a bottom half interrupt handle, right? And so you have the piece where it's raised, right, and your routine is called, and the technique now is to say, okay, I have my interrupt, I've scraped my data that came off the line that I'm interested in, and now I want to schedule a task to do something with it. And when you do that, you have something that the kernel can then deal with scheduling wise in order to do the rest of the processing behind your interrupt handling. And that is the other interesting thing is it's important to do as little as possible in the top half, because during that time, in essence, you are in a situation where interrupts are disabled. And you don't want to be in that place for very long, because you're going to be introducing, going back to our original discussion, the IRQ latency, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy way to get yourself IRQ latency, because during that little minuscule slice of time that you've getting your data off the line, you must by default disable all the interrupts coming off the system, because otherwise it would be anarchy, right? So you can't have that. And so what they've introduced now is handling in essence on in a much more scheduled manner. And that way you can reduce that sort of latency. In essence, what you're really doing is you're pushing IRQ latency onto the scheduler, right? And then in hopes you have a much better scheduling system, which of course you do.
Mm-hmm.
2.6.
Well, but what's the another value that you get out of it is that if you have a high priority task in a system and that does not really require or depend on certain interrupts. Let's say you have an interrupt that arrives at one of the hardware lines fairly frequently.
Yes.
And your real-time application does not rely on it, but instead actually relies on maybe two other interrupts that are arriving, maybe networking. Moving the interrupt service routines into user space, well, into a not user space, I'm sorry,
no,
into,
okay.
into the kernel threads, mm-hmm. allows you to compete for CPU with those threads, because what you can do is you can raise the priority of your real-time task above the priority of interrupts that do not interest you.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I completely forgot to mention that.
And that way you can control, you know, what kind of latency your application was going to experience. So,
mm-hmm.
In most systems, that's not really a problem, because again, this is a trade-off. As you move the interrupt service routines into kernel threads, you are really extending the period of time that it takes to execute them. Right, because they have to be scheduled, they have to compete for CPU, and by the time they get to the end of the ISR, you know, you might be in a completely different place with your application.
Yeah.
So that trade-off is really important to understand, I think, because in a lot of cases, people want both, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They want, for example, all the packets on a line, on an Ethernet line, to mm-hmm. arrive at as fast as possible, and then also execute the real-time application
as fast as possible
in a reliable way. And those two things will contradict, but again, it's a matter of how tight the loop in your the shortest loop in your high priority task is.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the frequency at which the interrupt arrives on the Ethernet line.
Yeah, and that's one of those, you know, throughput versus predictability issues we run across. And that's,
yeah.
There's a trade-off, right? And you're right, you can't have on a single processor system that only really has one thread of execution. There's really one thing executing at a time. You can't have that.
Right.
You can approximate it, but you really... You're still going to make that big trade-off between either servicing what's coming in off that hardware line, or making sense out of it as it comes through your application.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting
We're being flagged.
Yeah, we're getting you've talked too long. I don't know. They do the thing with their hand that looks like a hand thing, and then whatever hand across the.
I know.
We really covered. We still have more things. One of the things I did want to dig in and talk about was the high resolution timers.
Yes.
And then we also mentioned the latency tracking that's inside of the kernel as well, so you can get some sort of picture as to what's going on.
And I also wanted to talk about kernel configuration options that are available in the latest 2.6 Linux kernels, and which of the features that we just described are turned on by default.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah, we have to cover that.
Right, so that means that we'll have a third episode on the real time.
Sorry about that.
Well, I hope that this is all interesting. On one hand, I know that this is all a bit at a very low level that we talk about. Right, we go fairly deep into some of the topics and can be sometimes confusing. Even to us here, some of the concepts are confusing. To me as well.
I think you're the smart one.
Okay. Well, anyways, if you have any questions or if you would like to provide us with your feedback, comments, please do so. You can send us email at podcast@timesys.com. Or visit our website at timesys.com.
I think we're under timesys.com/podcast is the URL that takes us to the page. And there's at least over 10 episodes if you want to listen to them. And one of the guys here that takes care of our site even built in a little MP3, little player.
Yep.
So, if you don't have... if you want to pass the page along to someone that may not have iTunes or other sort of player and they want to listen in, it makes it really easy.
Yeah,
it's pretty remarkable. I don't know if you've seen the page, but he did a great job on it.
I agree. It's very nice, and you don't have to, as you said, look for other players. You can just listen to our podcast right on our page.
I think it's pretty
but cool. Again, we would like to hear from you. Any comments on what we talk about? Does it relate to your project, to the problems that you are finding as you go through your project? And if we haven't covered some of the areas that you're interested in, please do let us know.
Yeah, because a lot of the material we do, like I know some of the things we covered, even when this had to do with feedback that we got from the last podcast. So we want to make sure that we're covering what you're interested in. So as I said, drop us a line at podcast@timesys.com. And let us know if you want us to cover something particular or if we yet again have glossed over the voluntary versus priority inheritance concepts. Maybe someone can even explain it to me. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Check out our new site to get free code, discuss, and learn about embedded Linux development. Go to timesys.com today.